Eoch tanuyap, kuige iwans kuyens na. Hi everybody, my name is Kuige Iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
You're listening to Each for All on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, and live online at coopradio.org. This is the song Dance from Eagle and Hawk, a Canadian Indigenous rock group based in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Today is Canada's National Indigenous Peoples Day, June 21st, summer solstice. In Canada, this is a day we recognize and celebrate the cultures and contributions of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Indigenous peoples. We are also in the midst of National Indigenous History Month. I've been reflecting on that idea of recognizing the cultures and contributions of Indigenous peoples. My friend recently said to me something that resonated in my brain. They said, if you want to do something for reconciliation, then recognize Aboriginal rights. Growing up in BC, I remember hearing about landmark rulings when First Nations were winning cases for rights to their land and to fish and to hunt. However, I wasn't able to really articulate what had happened until well into my 20s. That Britain had previously recognized Aboriginal rights by Royal Proclamation in 1763, so that Indigenous peoples had titles to the land and could negotiate treaties to sell the land to the Royal Crown, and only the Crown, of course. But as the Crown quickly signed treaties across the continent from east to west, Indigenous peoples giving up their land for pittance, by the time they got to BC, they just kind of gave up on treaties and skipped signing them and just took the land. When BC joined Confederation in 1871, only 14 treaties on Vancouver Island had been signed, and Aboriginal title to the rest of the province was left unresolved. And it wasn't until 1970 that Indigenous peoples were able to pursue Aboriginal rights to the Supreme Court of Canada. Remedy for all of this is still being worked on today, and I encourage you to check out the BC Treaty Commission's website, bctreaty.ca, to learn more, so we can all support recognizing Aboriginal rights. We are also here to celebrate today, celebrating Indigenous cultures and contributions. Tonight on Each for All, we celebrate the amazing work of the Aboriginal Housing Management Association and its organizations. AMA has been working tirelessly to coordinate the work of over 50 Indigenous-led organizations dedicated to addressing the inequities and barriers faced by Indigenous people in finding adequate, culturally appropriate housing. This January, the organization released British Columbia's first Indigenous community-led provincial urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing strategy. Tonight, we will learn about this amazing association and its vision for housing off-reserve peoples. This is my interview with Margaret Faux, the Chief Executive Officer of the Aboriginal Housing Management Association. Let's have a listen.
So I have with me Margaret Faux. She's the Chief Executive Officer of the Aboriginal Housing Management Association. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Margaret, I wonder if you could start by setting a bit of the scene for us. How did the Aboriginal Housing Management Association come to be? You're celebrating 25 years this year.
Yes, correct. Our organization has been officially on the ground for over 25 years now, but our providers that comprise our organization have been doing the work on the front line for nearly 50, and some of them just over 50 years. But our organization came together under the principles of self-determination in the 1990s when the federal government decided to get out of the housing game and devolve all of the housing programs, including the urban Indigenous housing programs, to the provincial governments. And when that occurred, our providers came together as housing experts who understood the complexity of what it means to be a person that needs to reside in an urban, rural, or northern community, aka in the colonial language, off the reserve or away from home. And so our providers came together and said that if the government is going to devolve our programs, we don't believe that anybody else has the level of knowledge, expertise, or capacity to meet the needs of our communities the way that we do. So we would like to actually take over the devolution of our programs directly to ourselves, which was the seeds that created the official Aboriginal Housing Management Association in 1996.
And you mentioned, so this was like a collaboration of a lot of organizations, it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely. It was approximately 23 individual urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing providers who were at the time exclusively funded under the CMHC's pre and post 85 operating agreements, as well as rural native housing programs. We came together and said that we would like to create an organization that could administer our own funds for our own communities. And the province of BC was very supportive of that and has remained supportive of that through the switch between Liberal NDP and Liberal and back to NDP again through those years since 1993, when the federal government officially stopped funding urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing programs. So we now are over 55 Indigenous housing and service providers located all across British Columbia, and they manage more than 95% of all Indigenous housing units in urban, rural, and northern areas of the province. So we're in many municipalities across BC.
We've talked a lot on our show with Tom Armstrong from the Co-op Housing Federation of BC, and we've also had the Nonprofit Housing Association of BC on. I know you have a relationship with the other organizations as well as BC Housing. What is that relationship?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is the complexity of urban, rural, and northern Indigenous tenants and people that are seeking support in urban, rural, and northern communities, they don't necessarily get their needs met by just urban Indigenous housing and support programs, because there aren't enough housing units, there aren't enough support programs to meet their needs. And so we know that our community is gaining access to programs within non-Indigenous housing service providers and support providers. And so it only makes sense that for us to ensure that we're being inclusive, that we're reaching out in a good way to all of our community, is to really maximize the partnership with organizations like Co-op Housing BC and BC Not-for-Profit Housing as sector leaders here in the province of BC.
One of the questions I wanted to ask to kind of get a sense about the unique needs of Indigenous people in our province, can you talk a bit about, I guess, the historical barriers for accessing housing that Indigenous people face?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest barrier is the myth that is commonly carried throughout community and all levels of government, municipalities, provincial and federal governments, and general community providers at large, that Indigenous peoples are a homogenous population, that we all have some place where we could go back to, and that, you know, there is no real distinction amongst ourselves. But in reality, you know, we know that governments have the distinctions-based focus under UNDRIP, and here in British Columbia under DRIPA. But what we don't understand is that, what many don't understand is that the Indigenous populations that need to find housing in off-reserve communities, in urban, rural, and northern communities, are a mixture of those three distinction-based groups. So they're First Nations, they're Inuit, and they're Métis. But they're also the status, the non-status, status unknown, self-identifying. And those are the people that will never get captured if we only focus on a distinctions-based ideology. And that's what our organization has been fighting. Our community housing support providers have been fighting and meeting those needs for nearly 50 years, because there's just this general perception that we can all go back to a reserve. Well, the Métis have been landless and homeless, you know, technically. I mean, I just heard this in a meeting with Métis Nation BC 2 weeks ago, you know, and so they've this distinction that we can all go back to a reserve, it's the first myth that we all have to overcome. It's a barrier that we all have to overcome, because along with that myth is the belief that we as Indigenous peoples are a federal responsibility. And I know I've talked to FCM, I've talked to UBCM. There's a big barrier in municipalities that they somehow believe that they're absorbing the responsibility of the federal government. And yet we are residents within those communities, and we don't all have the capacity to go home, because for people like myself, I'm a 60 scoop. I was adopted, fostered and adopted into a non-Indigenous family and non-Indigenous community, and I've made my sense of belonging in the urban, rural and northern environment. So even if my chief and council phoned me tomorrow and said, I have a house for you back on the reserve, it's not a simple process when I've set my sense of belonging to be down here in the Fraser Valley. And that's the case for many of our communities. Chief Clarence Louis and I just had a conversation 2 weeks ago as well in Osoyoos, and they're doing amazing work there for their community. But even he acknowledged, with a membership of 550 First Nations members under his leadership, there are members that will never come home to reside because they've set their sense of belonging elsewhere. And so we really need to have open and frank conversations about barriers like myths, barriers like stereotypes, and then the very reality of what the 60 scoop, the residential schools, the Indian day schools, and the just the ongoing racism that occurs in most of community against Indigenous peoples, full stop, are immediate barriers to their sense of safety. And that's what we've been doing for nearly 50 years as housing experts. We've been meeting that gap through culturally safe and trauma-informed housing and support models.
We are in the middle of National Indigenous History Month as well. We're going to be broadcasting this on National Indigenous Peoples Day. How do you see that those events and their connection to reconciliation, and, you know, the racism and the myths that you're talking about, are these acknowledgement and events, are they helping? What other things would you suggest people do to address the myths and barriers that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, it's always been about basic human rights. I mean, housing rights are human rights. Indigenous rights are human rights. And perhaps in today's language, you know, when, and I'm going to quote a dear friend of mine, Carol Ann Hilton, it's about recognizing the rights of Indigenous leaders, whether we actually belong to the distinctions-based focus that government likes to focus on, or we've found our place of belonging in urban, rural, and northern organizations and have developed our expertise, such as our organization has over the last 25 years and our providers have over nearly 50 years, recognizing the rights of us as Indigenous leaders to take our seats at the economic table of Canada on all fronts. Our providers have demonstrated that capacity for nearly 50 years. My dear friend and mentor, Rosanna McGregor from Caribou Friendship Center, once framed it in this great quote. You know, we have paid off mortgages, we have divested, reinvested, and redeveloped within our communities, yes, with the help of government, but by and large, through acts of self-determination, creating social enterprises, creating self-source revenue. You know, look at Macola Development Services, who are a for-profit subsidiary to the Macola Housing Organization. Vancouver Native Housing has a fair trade gallery and a boutique hotel. Luma Native Housing has their health center. I mean, our providers have been able to demonstrate over their 50 plus years that they are not only experts in meeting the needs, but they also have demonstrated their business savviness. They've demonstrated that they have the capacity to deliver on any front, in any funding front, that government of any kind is willing to get behind and invest. And if you take a look at our website, you'll see a number of research documents, including our recent strategy that was just tabled in January. But ahead of those are a number of other research documents that are consistently demonstrating through evidence-based research that for every dollar that is invested in urban Indigenous housing and support programs, we return over 700% social return on investment. Within that is a minimum of a 230% direct return on investment through reduction in access to other services, through creating stability, you know, and therefore, and not no need to access, you know, addiction services or, you know, RCMP or policing services. And those are tangible numbers that I think are the things we celebrate through National Indigenous Peoples Day. We celebrate the successes. We celebrate the business and economic savviness, not only of our providers, but our partners like Squamish First Nation, who just signed some historic agreements here in BC to develop housing for their own community. And they're having discussions with us to sign a tripartite agreement. We've had other First Nations come to the table and say, hey, we know our people are living in urban areas. What can AMA do to assist in this? That's what National Indigenous Peoples Day celebrations are about. It's about raising the profile of our place, not only at economic tables, but as equals within community, as viable businesses, as people that have been contributing to this province and to this country since time immemorial.
It is inspiring to hear you speak about this and the impact that your communities are having. When you put together a housing strategy plan, how do you now take your plan and see it progress?
Yeah, I mean, and that's been a bit of a work in progress for us. I mean, that strategy that we tabled on January 26 is the first of its kind in Canada. It's for Indigenous peoples by Indigenous peoples, full stop. This was about consultation with our housing providers, our tenants, elders, youth, community stakeholders, including CHFBC, including BCMPHA. We had Métis Nation BC at the table. We had the Assembly of First Nations. We had the First Nations Health Authority, BC Association of Friendship Centers. And the reason we had such an inclusive, inclusionary process is because the needs of our community mandate that we actually have this holistic lens on what a housing strategy can look like. And the data that came out of that was really put through the grinder from BC Housing, from our leaders at the table that wanted to be sure when we came back out with this strategy and said that we need nearly 20,000 new housing units put to ground, that we need over $500 million invested in renovations and repairs, that we needed to invest in infrastructure issues, we needed to invest in environmental issues. I mean, last year alone was a huge wake-up call for all of us on the impacts of climate change. I mean, we started out with a heat dome, went into fires, then we went into floods, you know, and now we're seeing the need to actually be leaders in effecting change that can prohibit ongoing vulnerability to our community through all of those. And then COVID on top of all of that, supply chain issues that are affecting our ability to meet the needs of our community for base things like food security. You know, our strategy was already ahead of that game and taking a look at issues of recruitment and retention, taking a look at how housing needs to be more than just bricks and mortar. It needs to be about food security. How can we assist our communities by incorporating community gardens? How can we assist our communities by incorporating climate appropriate development? And how can we support our communities by creating culturally relevant housing, which is more than, as I said, just four walls that actually historically have been designed to segregate and disassociate our sense of community rather than bring us together, which is our traditional practices. So for us, it's really been about helping community, you know, understand that. And we've done two engagement sessions in Victoria and Vancouver, where we brought together community leaders, MLAs, MPs, local First Nations, local housing sector partners, to share with them the strategy and the value of endorsing that strategy. We've also presented to UBC through the BC Urban Mayors Caucus, UBCM. We've presented to FCM just a couple of weeks ago at their first inaugural get together face to face. It was a hybrid session since COVID. And we continue to lobby the federal government to get behind the investment in this strategy. And we won't rest until we get some level of dedicated commitment. We know that the federal government in budget 2022 tabled a $300 million investment to co-create the national urban Indigenous housing strategy. And we strongly believe that the strategy we tabled in January was specifically targeted to be, what's the word that can be used? It can be rolled up, you know, to a national scale.
This is mainly in British Columbia. Are other provinces working through other associations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our organization sits as a member of the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association. I happen to be the president-elect for that organization for this year. And underneath the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association, in absence of any other national Indigenous housing organization, CHRA opened their doors to allow the over 140 housing and support providers across Canada that have been doing exactly what we're doing here in BC. They've been doing that across the country. And they came together over a decade ago and created the Indigenous Caucus and have subsequently created the Indigenous Caucus Working Group, who over the last decade created a concept of a for Indigenous by Indigenous housing center that we have been lobbying the federal government to fund for over 3 years now, in actuality, since they tabled the national housing strategy with the glaring absence of Indigenous housing targets within the national housing strategy. And we've stood as witnesses at the HUMA Commission, at the INAN witnessing events over the last 2 years. We've attended the National Housing Council roundtables to speak to the glaring gap within the National Housing Strategy. And the goal would be to leverage those experts across the country. I mean, the, you know, right now they have the Ontario Aboriginal Housing Association. They put their strategy out last year asking for $10 billion. We know Namarand Housing in Saskatchewan has been a strong lead in Saskatchewan, despite the fact the province has not been good investors or good partners for Namarand. They continue to work, you know, again, through innovation and leadership to meet the needs of Indigenous populations in Saskatchewan, you know, generally speaking. And so there are many other organizations across the country that have been doing the same work that we've been doing, but they lack a unified voice for the most part, other than Ontario Aboriginal, who represents the urban Indigenous providers in Ontario. There is no other AMA or Ontario Aboriginal properly constructed, but other provinces have been asking for it.
When I read the housing strategy plan, it seems kind of like a no-brainer when you're talking about the dollars invested and the social return on those investments. What gives you hope that they're going to come to the table with the funds?
Well, I think the biggest hope that we have is that they're starting to adapt our language. I mean, there was no mention in any budget from 2017 onward of urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing, which is the brainchild of Indigenous housing providers across Canada that came together under the Indigenous Caucus Working Group within CHRA that started to say, well, what does it look like for us to have our own voice? And the language we came up with very deliberately was the urban, rural, and northern Indigenous peoples, because that is exactly where they're living. They're living in urban, rural, and northern communities, aka off of the reserve. So the fact that we actually have, for the first time in budget 2022, a $300 million co-creation plan for an urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing strategy is exactly what we've been lobbying for collectively across Canada for a long time now. So I have hope that as governments of all levels start to utilize the very language that we've been utilizing in our advocacy, that we're starting to make some headway here. So I still remain optimistic. I was disappointed with the $300 million when we know that we're asking for $7.3 billion over the next 10 years, just for our own strategy here in British Columbia. And we know ONFA was asking for $10 billion. I mean, we're talking $20 billion between two provinces practically, and we only got $300 million. But it's a start, and it's the crack in the door that we're going to use to leverage that fully open to start having a real dialogue about, you know, how do we get this money flowing and get these people that are struggling across Canada with all these barriers to housing, with the ongoing, you know, exclusionary policies that are happening at all levels of government, and start to really affect the lives of people that need it the most.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked often about the social determinants of health, and housing is high on that list.
Yeah. Grand Chief Doug Kelly once said to me, you know, Margaret, how do we help somebody who's fighting, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's addiction, whether it's trying to exit the sex trade, whether it's trying to escape gender-based violence, how do we actually help anybody if we can't give them a safe place to rest? And he said this very specifically to me about a young man who simply needed to rest his head before he starts to address anything else in his life. So absolutely true.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and sharing all of the amazing work that the Aboriginal Housing Management Association is doing. And yeah, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, so in my language, Toyoksit Nun, thank you, Robin, and Toyoksim, thank you, everyone, for opening your ears, your eyes, and your hearts to what we've been trying to do for over 50 years now. So thank you.
That was Margaret Foe, the Chief Executive Officer of the Aboriginal Housing Management Association, speaking about British Columbia's first Indigenous community-led provincial, urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing strategy. If you'd like to read the report, you can visit their website, ahma-bc.org, and you can download it from there. We'll also link to it off our website, eachforall.coop. Today is National Indigenous Peoples Day in Canada. It is celebrated as a statutory holiday in the Northwest Territories since 2001, and in the Yukon since 2017, but not yet across the rest of the country. We do still get the Queen's birthday off, and maybe we'll trade that statutory holiday one day. We'll be right back after this station identification. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. I'm your host, Robin Puga.